The following episode may contain spoilers for the game Frosthaven.
Welcome to episode 5 of our board game podcast, A Master's Degree in Rolling Terribly, where you am dirt, I am dirt, and everybody still am dirt. I'm your host, Eddie, and joining me is my co-host, the man who breaks the game and constantly threatens to PvP us with broken abilities that somehow also hurt the team, Gaz! Say hi, Gaz.
You deserve it, and you know it. If I could disarm you, I would. Unfortunately, I can only disarm myself at the moment.
Well, you have yet to actually hit me with it. The only person that's copying it at the moment is Phil.
Yeah, so I know, but
I'm in
but
the clear.
I feel like each other turn, I threaten to poison you.
You threaten, but you don't have the balls to pull the trigger.
Oh, well, let's wait until we get into next week. So, anyway, hi, everybody. Yeah, that's what we're going to do. We're going next week where focus is, just calling it. Get as many status effects onto Deddy as possible.
Oh, just exhaust. This week on MDirt, we're going to cover the outpost phase. We're going to go into a road event, which was a really interesting one, kind of. We're going to get towards scenario 5. We have selected scenario 5, which is from the previous chain that we were doing, where we were following those Algox, picking it aside. And now further investigating, I guess, what they're about and what they're protecting and, I don't know, saying hi to them. And then Gaz and I might have a little chat a little bit later about enemies and what our thoughts are around the different monster types that we've encountered so far in our adventures. But first, Gaz, outpost phase, what do we do?
Yeah, well, I mean, this was a pretty eventful outpost phase. So firstly, time is ticking along. Nothing has happened yet. I think we've written down some numbers on our little time ticky phase. So there's a thing that needs to happen once we get a certain amount of crosses. But yeah, winter is coming. And
which is interesting, yeah. The fact that they've actually given us something to say it's coming in the future. It's not just printed on the sheet, because there are some predetermined ones that are printed on the campaign sheet. But this is one that it's kind of like come out of nowhere and it's like, oh, in 3 days or 4 days or however many it's going to be, this is going to happen.
Yeah, and it's going to be terrible. Like, we know that, right? Like, we're very aware that nothing in either of these franchises is ever positive. If you get something, it's going to be really bad for us.
Are you telling me a game hasn't come out where it's just been nothing but amazing luck all the way through and, like, no fights, everyone's happy, you know? It's just experience the fun.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, the events, it's not going to be right down this number that's looming every time you tick a box to advance time. And when we get there, it's somebody's birthday and we all get birthday cake, right? Like, that's not likely going to be the situation.
Can we like copyright that or something and bring out the birthday game?
Yeah, that's true, actually. All right. The legacy birthday game. I think that could be Isaac's next project.
Hmm.
So we did the outpost phase. So we did tick some time off. We got a little bit further along that. We had a event which went poorly for us and was a bit funny. We thought we were doing a great job, and turns out it was not a great job. So what's funny about it is we actually succeeded in what we were hoping to achieve, and the outcome was bad. So that was fast. Well, it was bad for everybody.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody in Frosthaven had a good time of it.
But we meant well.
We 100% we meant well. And that's why hell is paved with good intentions. Or the road to hell is paved with good intentions. So anyway, that went badly. And that caused us to have to start our next scenario with 2 damage. Now, we're not even through the road event yet, so that was a bit like, oh, okay, outpost phase events are also going to have an impact on what we do. That's interesting.
Mm.
We built some stuff. I think we built like a hide factory or something like that. I'm just going to refer to all of Hide Hut. Yeah,
something.
Yep.
I don't know.
So we build that. So that's two down now. We've got a lumber mill and we've got a hide factory.
Yeah, because in terms of prioritizing, we really weren't making any wood or bringing any back. So we went straight for the wood. Funny about this later. And then, yeah, we were like, well, what's the next thing we need? Well, we keep getting metal, so let's go for hide, right? Yep. And, yeah, we hired the lumber mill's brother to run the hide place, and his prices are pretty much the same.
Yeah, yeah, I think they've got a standard pricing model across all of Frosthaven. So, but yes, as you mentioned, and spoilers for what we looted, turns out we didn't need to build a lumber mill because we went to the lumber world and all there was lumber. So, but yes, anyway, we built the hide, so looking to pump some money into that and get us some hides. And we also, we leveled up. Well, 50% of the party who hadn't leveled up already leveled up.
So yeah,
that was myself and Deddy.
That's right. So Deddy's, mine. So my Drifter leveled up and Gaz's Geminate leveled up, and we finally got to enjoy that moment of going through level 2 cards and what exactly we're going to bring. And I'll be completely honest with you, I didn't really struggle with that choice.
I did.
Yeah.
All four sections that were available to me are over my two cards, so top and bottom, all made no sense.
Mm. Yeah, but you know that's going to be great for you because for your deck of no sense, gives you more puzzles, right?
Yeah, yeah, correct. And this is something we were talking about during the session. I feel like the Geminate is 14 niche cards, so. There's usually a card that'll suit the situation either really well or okay, but like there's just no normal cards that's just like, hey, move here and hit a guy, right? There's always, like I think we mentioned, terms and conditions. So the level up to level 2, so getting the first lot of cards, was no exception, and it provided like really interesting decisions. So, but I might talk about that a little bit more later on because I did use one of the cards to decent effect.
I used also one of the cards, and I have a surprise for you later about that.
Oh, okay, that's good. That sounds like we cheated.
No.
Okay, all right, good. Accidentally. Did. Always accidentally.
No.
So from memory, that was the end of the phase. I think we tried to brew a potion, I feel like.
I don't remember, did we?
Yeah, I thought that... I'm not sure if Phil brewed the potion the time before that or this time. But I feel like we tried to.
Phil's got a potion already. Are you talking about a second one? Did he make a second one?
No, maybe it was just... Oh, no, that's right. We only have one herb.
Yeah, we just didn't have any herbs. We're trying to
find... apparently, Frosthaven's tapped out of herbs now. Like, yeah. We're like 5 scenarios in.
Well, it's like in WoW, when you tap the node... It respawns after a certain amount of time. But Frosthaven runs on a slightly different rule set. So, yeah, we don't know how long. We're still waiting.
We're still waiting for the refresh, yeah.
That's yeah, right. So.
But, yeah, so overall, pretty eventful outpost phase with good and bad. And, yeah, and as Daddy mentioned, we decided to go next to probably what was the... logical next mission after we finished choosing our path between the frosty people and the icy people. And when we were talking about that epic duel, which we decided to get sidetracked to go and kill some crabs. But after our we filled our boots with that and returned to Frosthaven, we thought, you know, let's get back on track with this path. And that's what led us to taking this next scenario.
Yeah. So we made our way back to Algok's territory, I guess, to further investigate what was happening there. Now, on the way, we had our road event because we like doing events, especially at inconvenient times. And there's always one whenever you would like to head to another scenario. And this was, and we discussed this a few episodes ago when, well, it might have been at the very start when we were talking about the event system in Gloomhaven, this was one of those events that kind of felt a little bit like a coin flip. And I'm not going to go into details, but there was nothing really indicating sort of the right option. It was just like, do that one or do this one. And we kind of tried to make reason of it by just saying, oh, you know, my character would like to go this way. Who else would like to come this way? And we kind of just settled on one of them. And it turned into a terrible idea. We had no idea that it was going to be that way. I copped a lot of blame because I was the first one that wanted to go that way. And as a result, we took more damage.
Yeah. Yeah, we chose poorly. Like, even without knowing what the other option was, considering we were already starting the scenario with true damage, the result of our poor decision was to take another 3 damage. So now that's 5 damage we were taking into the very first, into the scenario.
Mm, that's right. So we started to set up scenario 5, and as I was getting the boards out and preparing the monsters and all of that, we had Fortella playing the actual scenario, and we set up a new mob, actually. So I was setting up the new standees, and it was ice wraiths, which you know, have a very different look. I was expecting maybe some more Algox, but no, it wasn't the case. And then I read, you know, the scenario. Fortella read the scenario, and I read the goal. And the scenario goal was, well, word for word, I can't remember. It was like, kill everything?
Yeah, it was kill everything and then read the next section.
Yeah, okay. It was.
So with one door in the room. So I think once we go into there, we had to read the more information.
Yeah, but more importantly, we had a negative scenario effect.
Yeah, because we fell in a hole. So the storyline, storyline-wise, we were tracking through some place where the ice lady that we allied with told us to go, and we found a big Algox, and he made a hole, and we fell down that hole. And that caused us to start with a negative scenario effect, which was great because it was something we were trying to collect like Pokemon, which yeah. was... starts with scenario damage. Yeah.
That's right. Which then posed the question, and we actually discussed it, can you start the scenario dead? And I don't think we had an answer to it.
No, yeah, because I think we all had enough life except for Kelvin. He would have been dead, but he, along with me and Phil, have the ignore scenario effects perk, which is great. It's clearly the best perk in the game. But yeah, it's an interesting discussion because actually, and now I'm remembering it a bit more clearly, the result of the road event was for us to take 3 damage and brittle, kind of like a once-off effect. But you ended up taking the double damage on that one.
Yeah, well, we questioned it. Number one, we questioned whether or not you can die before the scenario starts, right? And I had something to say about that. I was like, look, if that was the case, we just wipe the scenario now and start again, and we're all, you know, on full health except for me, because I just take the extra 2 damage. Easy, right? Of course, that would not be the fun way of doing things. And number two, is the scenario effect going to trigger my brittle? And instead of doing 2 damage to me as a scenario effect, I actually take 4 and then lose the brittle. And I took it, right? I was on like 2 health starting this scenario, basically, after everything had happened. But yeah, I wasn't too sure, and I wasn't... You know, we weren't about to run around and check forums and all of that for this exact scenario. So, you know, if anyone has an answer for us, that'd be great. But, yeah, do we take the brittle damage from a scenario effect?
Yeah. Well, I think we, like, and the only thing we could settle on, right, was just read it word for word. And brittle says the next source of damage you take is doubled. And the scenario effect says everybody starts the scenario with taking 2 damage. Like, it doesn't even, you know, we're trying to look for a wording around, like, you know, you start with 2 less health or something like that, in which case you could be like, oh, okay, well, maybe not. But it just, from what it sounded like, that's how we played it. But anyway, it meant that not only were you starting on no HP, but we were also starting on low HP and with brittle. And so turn one, we were facing down these ice wraiths, which we had absolutely no idea what they were going to do, right? I think, interestingly enough, and we'll talk about this in a minute, is the normals had shields and the elites had range retaliate. So it was a really weird looking at them going like, oh, what are they even going to do? But yeah, basically our whole first turn was just like heal.
Go heal. Early. Go early and heal. And being a drifter, we want to put our persistent abilities out, right? We want to put our gloves and shoes on, and we want to strap our frying pan to our stomach. You know, after two rounds, we're ready to go. But no, I didn't have time to do any of that. So I had to, and this is what I found really interesting, is that once you sort of see how everything's done, you kind of set up your cards, right? You kind of decide what cards you're going to bring. And I actually changed my deck because of the current situation. And normally I go in with, I think it's Crushing Weight. And Crushing Weight is the one that's persistent, that plus twos to every time I do a melee hit. And that's the one I love, right? Because it turns a plus three into a plus five. It's great. I didn't equip that one. I equipped the healing one. So anytime I heal, I will heal for an extra two so that I could pop my trinket, because I had some necklace that was going to heal me for one. And instantly in the turn, I was going to heal for three and then use another card to heal. I was going to immediately fill myself up. So I've gone this not really tanky, but very burst healy and ranged. I decided to play around with the ranged one. I've got another persistent ability. It was plus one to range, and when you do a ranged attack, and plus one damage, which I thought I'd mess around with because the Drifters literally got some ranged cards as well as some, like, they've literally got everything. There's a kind of a term for that, but they can do a little bit of everything, and it's really, really cool. So yeah, I went in with a completely different setup and was really looking forward to seeing what happened.
Yeah, what was weird was that we've gone from needing a tank to you deciding to be a ranged healer. And so I love this jack of all trades thing, because it literally means you just switch jobs and just don't do the job that you've been supposed to do, right? Like, it's...
Do you not recall, I was still at the front and still copping the hits, and I would just heal them up. Okay, here's another thing. I got incredibly lucky just for the whole scenario. I got three natural nulls from the enemy deck. Okay, that's lucky. That was tanky. I didn't mean to say lucky. That was tanky. All right, I tanked really, really well because
lucky. Lucky is the correct word there. You were very lucky that you chose poorly, and the enemy deck decided to reward you for that.
No, I still took damage, and I still healed it when I was taking damage. So I still did my job. Anyway, so talk to me a little bit about these ice rates and how did we go with them? There were five by memory. It was something like three normal and two elite or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. There was a couple up there. They moved. So these are my new favorite enemy from a design perspective. I can see them giving us hell in a harder scenario where there's lots going on. In a nutshell, the reason why I love these, and I think they're so cool that they've managed to jam an extra kind of design into an enemy. Because normally the enemies, the elite and the normals, are the same. They just have slightly different stats, right? So sometimes the elites might have innate, you know, retaliate or innate poison or something like that, where they're doing worse stuff to you. Obviously have more hit points, could have shields, and then the normals don't. Because even just looking at these at face value, the normals have shields and the elites have the range retaliate. Now, what was interesting when we drew the very first card was that it gave the normals a ranged attack, and it specifically said only the normals could do a ranged attack, so they had range now.
Led to a bit of a Google and a bit of a rule thing, because we were using one of the online apps, and it was like, maybe we're reading this wrong, we have to find the original card. And even then, that didn't really fully clear it up. We thought we were doing something wrong.
Yeah, I feel like it took about three turns before we realized it started to trigger a little bit, because when I was looking at how they were behaving, because what happens is it means that the normal ones were staying back and shooting us at range, and they had shields, right? So they were hard to take out. Meanwhile, the elites were moving closer to us who had retaliate. And it was range retaliate. So they were sending in the ones with the range retaliate for us to get in our way, and we had to attack them while the others were sitting back, you know, shooting us from afar and had shields, so we couldn't really just take them out. So it was like, as soon as that happened, I'm like, oh, okay, I see what's going on here. That's really cool. And that wasn't even the last part of how that monster worked, right? We started dealing with those and we started pushing through them. And then they drew this card, and it just changed everything, literally, right?
Before you jump to that card, okay, the final, you had an opportunity to use a brand new card in this room.
Oh, yeah. So I feel like Amdurt can show itself in a variety of different ways. Sometimes it's rolling all ones or skulls or whatever is the bad version of that. It's drawing your null when you have a big attack. Or in this case, it's when you jump into the middle of four enemies, ready to pop your abilities that give you retaliate four at range. So you're going to gain heaps of XP and do heaps of damage, and they all drew like shield retaliate, so yeah. Didn't attack, so they all just stood there and looked at me while I was also standing there.
They drew a heal, actually.
Even worse, right? So it meant any of the damage we had done. So yeah, there I was. I'm like, all right, cool. Well, my big plan to use my new card and basically just do this massive retaliate kind of move just did nothing, like literally nothing. I think I just walked up next to one of them and just said, I'll hit you next turn.
Yeah. But we did have, you know, oh, that was interesting. Calvin on his Bone Shaper started doing his, you know, Army of the Dead as they were walking through. Do you know what summons don't like? They don't like retaliate because his skeletons were just booking themselves and it was really, really rough. Phil on the Shadow Pooper, Deathwalker. Was just doing regular, I can't do much shadow kind of stuff at the start. And I was just doing weird ranged kind of things. I was actually coordinating with Gaz really, really well, actually, because that round was the one where he said he was going to go in and do his Poppy's giant, you know, axe from Dota, like call. And yeah, it didn't matter because no one was really attacking. And I followed in and went past him and started doing some AoE muddling. We actually managed to kill about two or three of them until your card came up.
Yeah, so that just blew my mind, and I think it's really, really cool. And again, I'm looking forward to when we fight more of these because I think it's going to really mess with this. But what it basically was is every normal Ice Wraith becomes an elite Ice Wraith, and every elite Ice Wraith becomes a normal Ice Wraith. So they literally permanently switch roles. And what that did it at the time, because we were looking at it and the ordering of it and going like, oh, wait, but no, hang on. Oh, no, this is no good, because then they switch their innate shields and retaliate. So the one that we was on low health that we were going to whack and the retaliate wouldn't have counted because we were going to kill it, suddenly had two shields.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, okay, well, now I'm not going to kill it. And then the one that was on full life that had shields were like, well, we'll attack that one. Oh, wait, but now it's got retaliate. So it's cool because it kind of, again, shifted this, well, maybe we can't kill this one. We're going to hit the other one and we're going to take a bunch of retaliate damage, which we didn't think we were going to take because we'd chosen our card. So again, the way that the monster deck played out has added a new element to these monsters anyway. And I'm sure we're going to see more surprises along the way. But it was so cool. It was really, really cool because it wasn't just, oh, man, they're going really fast and doing a big attack, because that kind of that gotcha can be good and scary. But this was actually like, wait, hang on, what do we do? Right? Now, well, luckily we were in a position where I think they were almost already dead, so it wasn't that bad. But if that had happened when there was three or four still around us on decent health, like that would have been a wait, hang on, everyone that needs to switch targets. Nobody chose Pierce. You know, those kind of choices that you'd made ahead of time would have just gone out the window, and you have to play suboptimally, which you know, it's really cool that the monster was kind of forcing us to do that.
Out of the creatures we've had to fight, and this will be part of the conversation later, they were the ones that had the most potential to screw up your plans, right? Because of this swapping thing, like you said, if they had done it earlier when we were getting into position to work around the shields and retaliates, whether it be from range and all of that kind of stuff, the fact that they can swap out, and if you're right, if they did that much earlier, it would have messed a lot of things up from the beginning. I, like you said, I mean, now that we know what they do, I was looking just then at their card list. I just brought it up on an app that I had just to make sure that I could remember what the card said. And I had a little sneak peek at a card we never actually saw. And I don't know, like live right now, if you want a little spoiler of what else they can do.
No, I don't. I like Discovery. Like anyone who listened to episode one, that's what I live for, right? Don't tell me anything.
Okay.
I don't want spoilers on our spoiler podcast, right? Like, so
yeah, well,
you can sit on that, and next time we fight them, be like, "Whoa, is it going to come up? Is it going to come up?"
Oh, it's going to be definitely a bit of an annoying thing, but it definitely would have pissed you off. Can I say that?
For Australian.
Yeah, that's true.
So. Interesting, though, you say the monsters that have the ability to stuff us up the most. I feel like the thing that's probably stuffed us up the most so far in our Frosthaven campaign is creatures with immobilize.
Yeah. So once we cleared off the ice wraiths, and I remember cursing and saying, well, I effing hate these guys. And I don't. But in the moment when they were ruining plans, because they ruined one of my plans, I can't remember what it was. We made our way into the only door, okay? And we opened the door, and the whole premise of it was going to be, because as per normal, when we clear a room, some people are resting, everyone's getting their cards ready. So I think it might have been Gaz and myself. Yeah. I said, Gaz, open the door, and then we'll do the regular thing. Now, if this is a door with a corridor and there's creatures there, we lure them into our room. We bide our time, we can do some prep. And then, you know, Calvin, who's further back playing catch up, and Phil as well, you know, they can come in and come at the right time. And this usually is the right way to do things. So we opened it up and we played the Fortella while I was setting up the room. And we had some frozen Yeti things. The boss standee from the Crabland, it was those. But there was one in each corner of the room, so there were four of them. And at the back of this room, there was also, in the middle, there was an altar. A big glowy altar that was doing weird, trippy stuff. And in the corner, there was a chest that we could loot. So we then read, you know, we heard the Fortella, and it was all these groaning and, you know, shambling noises. And, you know, sounds kind of like zombies. And that's essentially what it was. It was confirming that we had reached, like, this crypt where there was undead. And these undead shambling Yeti things with 10 health each and all elite were then coming towards us. So our win condition suddenly became kill all these guys, right? But in order to kill them, because they're immune, that's the catch here. You can't actually, they don't take any damage at all, right? They're completely immune. The only way to break their immunity is by doing damage to this altar, which has 16 health for our difficulty in our group, which was at the back of the room. So we immediately realized what that was. And these guys, you know, then slow moving, hit hard. We're not too worried. Once we kind of see their damage and what they can kind of do and see their stats, didn't seem too bad. We made a plan. We're going to bolt towards the end. We're going to blow up the altar. And then we can easily burst these guys down. Oh, and another catch. We now have to track rounds. So by round three, a fifth Yeti thing spawns. And by round five, a sixth one will spawn. So it's a bit of a race against the clock, maybe a bit of an attrition thing. And we made a plan. We knew what we needed to do. We started getting our really, really super fast cards ready because Phil and I were going to bolt straight down to the end deal with that altar. Were you coming down the end at that time, or were you just chilling in the middle of the room?
Yeah, I jumped in the middle of the room to open the door, disarmed a couple of them so that I couldn't get hit. Realized that that's what was going to happen, and you also decided to pick some fast cards to jump over there and try and do some damage to the altar.
Yeah,
because Phil was talking himself up about, I can deal with the altar, I 100% can deal with the altar, and we thought, great, cool, we know your damage output, we know this is going to work.
Yeah.
And then when he was pressed on it, he's like, oh, no, not this turn. It's like, oh, okay, I forgot the, again, there's a caveat with, like, everything you do. It's just like, wait, no, I can't do anything this turn because I haven't thrown up my shadows everywhere. And you're like, of course, I forgot about that, right? So what are we waiting for?
We're getting used to the big damage. We know it's coming at some stage. We just forget the little caveat of not yet.
Just hang on, not yet.
I'm going to tell you how good it's going to be,
yeah,
but not this turn.
Yeah, exactly. So, so I was just prepping to jump over there and do that, try to get rid of this altar so we can start killing these Yetis.
Yeah, and then the Yetis drew a card.
Yeah, and everyone happened to be in the perfect position to get immobilized.
That's right.
Made getting to the other side of the room really quickly impossible.
Yeah, they went really early.
They did actually, yeah. And this was one of those points that I think I said to you during the session that I love about the Gloomhaven Frosthaven way the game works. And I think we talked about this about in episode one when we were talking about what we love about the games is the reason they got to disarm us, sorry, immobilize us, was because of the decisions we made and where we went. If I looked at it and I was like, I went on one side and left the path open so you could come in because I didn't want to block you being able to run into the room and go. If I had just gone straight there, they all would have stacked on me and mobilized me and you would have been fine to get there.
That's right.
So, again, it's so cool because it means that, again, you can't just be like, oh, we lost because they drew that card. You're like, well, yeah, but if you had decided to go this way, then drawing that card actually would have had no impact on that. So it just means that, again, you're not without agency. You can look back through all of the decisions you make and realize that, yeah, well, I actually contributed to us getting, like, really stuck at this point. So that was a fun one because everyone had move cards, their big move cards pulled.
Big move cards.
Yep.
We all used them.
Yep.
And because they went before us,
mm-hmm.
we were staying in one spot and it was grim.
And and to just add insult to injury, right? We can't attack them.
No.
Because they're housing damage. So it's not even like, oh, well, they move next to you. Like, oh, okay, well, I guess instead of jumping over there and hitting the altar, I'll just punch this guy.
That's right. Right?
It's like, well, you can, but it's literally going to do nothing. So yeah. I think the only thing we could still do to them was we could still give them status effects. So I think you might have poisoned one or something like that.
Yeah.
So it did. It basically meant that you and me were like, oh, okay, I guess we'll skip our turns then.
Yeah, yeah, right? 100%. And it's not just skip your turn, I'll do my fat move next turn. It's that's going straight in the discard, right? Now I got to work around, you know, resting and getting it back in order to get over there or slowly over several rounds make my way over there.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that, I'll be fascinated to know whether they have the stem potions or equivalent in this that they had in Gloomhaven, because that's, for people who haven't played Gloomhaven or can't remember, that's the use a potion, return two cards or one card, depending on the errata you use. And what that can do...
Very powerful, though.
Oh, it's ridiculous. And I think the problem with it and why I'm going to be interested to see is that it was basically a necessity for every character to have a major and a minor stem, which almost takes away the point of having them, right? You can get to that discussion, another time.
It's gone. Like,
We don't know it's gone. It's a potion, right?
But I'm enjoying not having to rely on it and going, okay, has everyone got the exact same potion? It's meta right now. We need this. What do you mean you're not bringing it?
Because what it does, though, is it fixes those... I mean, when I say fix, that's the wrong word. It allows you to fix a bad situation like that by just going, well, I'll just do it next turn. So, right, we burnt all of our giant move cards. Well, then you just go, oh, okay, I'll just stamp potion and get those two cards back. So I'll just do it. So it almost takes away those moments because we had to re-change all of our plans, right?
If we
were able to just go, oh, we'll just have those cards back and do it again next turn, I mean, the chances of him drawing that same card again, I don't know if it was a reshuffle or whatnot, is low. And therefore you go, oh, okay, well, it just delayed us a turn. It didn't just change our plan. So, yeah, I'm going to be really interested to see what mechanic they've got in there for getting cards back and if it is going to be as powerful as those potions.
What made this scenario so cool was the way that the plans were ruined, right? It wasn't a run-of-the-mill go in and do... you know, whatever, kill everything and that's it. It threw an interesting endgame scenario, right? We saw the win condition, but also this really interesting run, just like you were mentioning before, of decisions where you could have gone left or right, followed by, you know, the guys walking up really quickly and immobilizing us just as we decided to spend. This is part of the story, right? It's part of the experience, and that's just what makes it so memorable. It would have been... Like, I'm actually not a fan of the stem. I like it from a gameplay point of view in having it in the moment to fix all that. But from a third-person point of view, like, when I'm looking from above at what happened, it just tells a way more enriching kind of story and experience and just makes it way more memorable. But it raised... What happened to us raised my enjoyment of this particular one than if it didn't happen. And I'll remember this scenario for that reason.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's going to keep coming up. So you don't have that get out of we don't yet have that get out of jail free card of oh, I'll just get my card back. Or that's really powerful. I'll do two turns in a row. It'll be look again. We've got heaps of potions to unlock. I'd say if it's going to be anywhere, it'd be one under the three potion doors. That you need three herbs and you need to unlock the bigger crafting table. But again, we're playing Advent Calendar Lotto here. Like, who knows which door it's under? That's the cool thing about it, right? Like, it could be really powerful, but we might not get it till halfway through the whole game.
Mm. I hope it doesn't come. I'm banning it. No one's making it. I'm banning it and ripping it up. Well,
I don't know if you remember. Yeah, well, they got patched in the original Gloomhaven. They used to do two cards and three cards. So Minor Stem was two, Major Stem was three, and they actually got patched to be one and two.
Because that's insane, though.
Three Major cards.
Three. Yeah.
And especially with classes that have a refresh, right? Like, there's classes that could refresh items. There's items that could refresh items. So you could get two and three cards back and then refresh it and get another two or three cards. Like, I remember playing the Quartermaster and having like 10 turns without ever resting because I was just constantly just refreshing these potions and just being like, I feel like this is not really how the game's supposed to be played.
No, well, when you put it into perspective like that, I mean, it's essentially, it's extra turns, obviously. It extends your turn out, but it's also three full heals, like three lay on hands almost where, you know, it's three extra mitigation. Complete negation of any kind of damage, and just there's so many different ways it can be used. Nah, it's OP, broken, don't like it.
Well, okay. We'll see how we go. But anyway, getting back on topic, after we got stuck and realized that our plans had been foiled, luckily Phil, who had carefully laid out his plans, was able to maneuver so that his plans weren't ruined. I think he still may have got immobilized, but he was in position to explode or throw up all of his shadows everywhere. Then, which set him up for the turn that he was promising us that he was going to have, which was to hit the altar.
And he did it again.
Like, I feel like it's almost now a meme that I will give him crap about not doing anything and then doing something really powerful at the end. But he just keeps doing it. Like,
yeah.
He was calculating, going like, I don't think I can kill the altar because I'm going to do three per hit and I'm going to hit like four times. So they're going to do 12, right? So that still, I think, was going to be about three or four damage off. And then I'm pretty sure he like did plus two and then crit or something like that. I was like, oh, okay, sure. Why not?
What altar? Right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Like, so, it got me thinking about if they implemented or if we just homebrewed a kind of arena situation, a PvP arena, and we're all fighting each other. It's kind of like scary to go up against Phil. But then a part of me realizes, no, he's not going to blow me up until turn six. So I can probably wreck him in the first two turns.
Yeah, 100%.
Before that even happens.
Yeah, get him before he finishes ramping and he's just paper mache. Right. But then if you let him set up, then he's going to explode. So, but look, I think, and you talked about this afterwards, after the session, we're all slightly getting a better idea about how each other's class works. Not so much about the cards that we've got. And I think, again, it's one of the really cool things about this system is that you do have your cards and no one else really knows what your cards you've got, but they have ideas about things you can do. And we can now look at, say, a room like that we ended up with six of these mobs because there was four and two more spawned, where we go, all right, we saw how much damage Phil could pump out in like three or four turns once he did that setup and just had all these shadows there. So we kind of now can rely on that a little bit. Like we know that if we get to a big room and we know we're like, all right, great. Hey, have you got all your cards? You can go large.
Yeah. Well, we know actually, I took the time to actually understand why it's taking so long for the shadows and how important they are. We actually have to work with him to get them out to begin with. And coordinate that because I'm under the impression he can just spew them all the time at will and then kick them wherever he wants. But I'm learning now he needs to actually hit something and a die with his tag on, with his persistent ability on it. And we need to coordinate around that properly, which you have ruined a few times by killing something before he had tagged it or something along those lines. And it's a bit of a DPS loss for him because it slows down his ramp, right? And now we are understanding that a lot better to get him going so that, yeah, he becomes, in a way, our end condition for anything, you know, big and nasty that's going to or race against the clock, and we need to take something down at the end of a scenario.
Yeah, and I think I did something really early on where I think I had a chance to either do a bunch of damage to one target or kill something that was on like 12 life, but use a big card to do it. And I think I ended up going with that because it had Phil's little shadow token thing on it. So if it died, it was going to turn into a shadow. And you know, he was kind of like, I really can't do anything until there's a shadow on the board, which I feel we've been hearing now for 5 weeks. And, you know, it's just a bit of a joke. But, it's interesting you say we know what we have to do and work with him, because we do. I think it's one of those things that if we go through the DPS meter, and I think we did look at that at the end, his damage through the first room was actually, I mean, as much crap as we give him for not doing anything, he actually did kind of contribute to that first room as well. And I almost feel like that might have been because we did help him get started a little bit. Mm. So we kind of enabled him at the start by like killing one of those mobs that had it on, which gives him a shadow, which means he can port to it, which means he can start hitting things. And then he can almost snowball from there.
His engine, right? Mm, it's like, yeah, it's almost an engine building. Once his engine is up and going, he just keeps running it over and over again. Yeah. And it's fantastic. We had more Yeti spawn because round one, we were in the middle of when we opened the room and then we got entangled. So round three was going to come and we were not going to, you know, end it in time. Spoiler alert, we didn't do it by round five either. So we ended up with two extra zombie Yetis that ended up coming out. Now, it was Gaz's time to shine because he was in the perfect position. And that card he tried to use earlier, well, he couldn't use it, but he still has it and he used it.
Yeah, I did. I got everyone to punch me really hard, but they got punched back. So it was pretty cool. It was pretty cool. Now, I did disarm myself, which is part of the instructions on the card, because what would a good card for the Geminate be if it didn't do some negative effect to themselves or their allies? Which actually came up the next turn when we completely forgot that I was disarmed and I started to do this attack that was hitting a bunch of enemies and killing them, and then I went, I'm disarmed. Mm. Undo. So everything went back and I just went, I stand still.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah. So I've got to track that better, but I'm glad we did pick it up before it got too far that we couldn't reverse it. That's the kind of thing that I find really bad. Like, it really sticks with me when we stuff stuff up like that. So yeah, but it's just one of those things I need to work around. I know disarming yourself sounds terrible, and it is. It's really quite bad. What I planned on doing was long resting. So what happened was I used it and I was like, that's fine, I'll just long rest next turn. And then something happened where I didn't need to. I was like, oh, I don't need a long rest, and then completely forgot why I was long resting in the first place. So yeah. I had this great new idea of what I could do, and then, yeah, halfway through doing it, I realized, oh, that's right, that's why I was going to long rest, because I can't do any of this.
Part of the card was not only were you blocking and doing a crap load of damage to everything that was hitting you, your XP bar was just going boing, 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 boing the whole time, right? It was your XP catch-up thing, which was great, because you usually complain about not getting any XP.
Well, it's a burn card, so I literally still can't. But yeah, it does. It gives me XP based on how many things I retaliate that turn. So it is really a big one to jump in the middle. And I feel like if I can get three or four off that, I think that's kind of like the ideal state. I feel like any more than that and I'm probably going to get booked, right?
Yeah.
Like if I'm getting 5 or 6 XP off that, I'm probably burning cards to not die. So yeah, that'll be interesting whether there's more tank mode that I can do to get that.
Yeah. After you did your thing and we realized we were whittling everything down. So there's like three left. And we started to look around and we were like, well, we should probably start looting some of the tokens. I think Calvin by this stage was almost in the he turned around and went back the other way. When we realized that everything was going to die. I finally got to play one of my new cards, level 2, Persistent Card, which I had thrown in front of me the round before in preparation for this. And I very carefully coordinated with Phil. He wanted to go onto a loot token. I was like, yeah, go for it. I'd already looted the chest, which was 3 loot cards. And then I went up to two guys who were next to each other, and the new card I had was whatever you decide to punch, you get to do two damage to the creature adjacent to one creature adjacent to it. And it was just flat, juicy, raw damage. And I was very, very, very excited to do that. Now, I'm just trying to look for something here.
He was very excited. Like, the excitement of moving up, of planning it. You could see it on his face.
Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
I'm hitting that for three. Mm-hmm. I'm going to spend this. This is my brand new card.
Mm. Ooh!
So I need XP as well.
No, it's because it's your brand new card.
Yeah. I got experience for using it.
Uh-huh.
On my next six melee attacks, targeting an enemy adjacent to any other enemy, one enemy adjacent to the target will suffer two damage. Okay. So it's called Shockwave. Oh. So I'm doing three to that with Pierce.
But it's still, other one still takes two damage, right?
Yes.
Two damage.
Oh, why?
You know, good feeling when you're long, you ducks up and you do the next.
You can't shit.
Yeah. So yeah. So for those wondering what was happening there, that was us watching Deddy wind up, swing his arm around in circles, get ready for that big punch. Tell us a little bit more about what he's doing, how he's doing it, how everything's going to die. And then him crying because he drew his null card.
Oh, it was just so sad. Like, I was so excited to finally play this new card, and it would work so much better in my fat melee build. And I just decided, hey, there's two guys there. Perfect. We're going to win this scenario. Let's get this out and get a little bit more XP. And I went up, and you heard it. Everyone, like, well, Phil laughed at me and gave me grief and saying, oh, don't you hate it when everything lines up? And yeah, you just can hear me cry live.
And that's it. And I think we had one of these last week as well. These will continually be funny until we need to hit something and win. And then it'll be, that recording will be, it'll be, you'll hear the chorus of groans as we realize this probably means we need to restart the scenario.
Yeah.
Oh,
definitely. Look, it's part of it. I love it. I embrace it. It's just like, it's better when it's to someone else and not me. So we went around and we started to pick up extra loot. Now, there was a loot trend that was happening through most of this scenario. And we, at this stage, when I think one of us looted something and we picked up a piece of lumber, a call was made by Gaz asking, how much lumber is in here? Is that all we're looting right now? Is something wrong with the loot deck? And we went around to see how much we had. Now, I checked the scenario loot deck to find out what was supposed to be in it. And it said something like 4 bits of lumber and 3 metal and 1 hide and then a bunch of plants and then the rest gold. And then you've got the random, you know, the item. I can't remember. From the random deck. So you got that. And collectively around the table, we had all the lumber, we had all the metal, and we had money. Where were the herbs?
Yeah.
And where was the hide?
Yeah, we literally need one herb. Like, I think we need one herb to unlock another potion. And the thing that we need more than anything else is hide. And it was hiding. It was nowhere to be seen.
Sorry. That was good. I like that. Okay, sorry.
Sorry, I like that. I like that reaction.
Did you plan that?
No. I'm just a funny guy. Yeah, so that means that now we are going back to Frosthaven next time. Although I feel like, and we have to discuss this a bit more, but we might be pushing on. But we're going to go back to the lumber guy who we usually pay for lumber and be like, hey, look at all our lumber. How cool are we? Maybe we can sell the lumber to him.
You know we're going to buy his lumber.
Oh, 100% we'll buy his lumber. I know. Yeah.
We're going to rub it in his face and then be like, can we have one lumber, please?
That's correct.
So we won that particular scenario. I wouldn't say it was too stressful. On paper, it had the potential to be very tense. And when it was unfolding, I was a little bit stressed. It wasn't until I started to see the kind of damage numbers these Yetis were pumping out that it wasn't that scary. We still had a lot of cards, right? Gone are the days.
I had one. I had one card left.
Oh, never mind. Gone are the days of me losing all my cards prior to being at the end. Now that I think about it, I do recall Calvin saying something along the lines of he was getting a little bit low, and then I mentioned, yeah, I've got six, but this was towards the end. So, yeah, okay, maybe it was definitely...
I don't think that was because it was hard, though. Yeah, I think we're getting a lot better at gauging how our power level and how hard we need to go. It's one of those things in a two-room scenario, it's probably going to be on the easier side unless there is like heaps of monsters or a lot of tricks or things going on. And that's the thing. We found the same with the other two-room scenario that we did, right? Like you don't really need to manage your cards all that well. You still do. Like you can't just burn a card every turn, but...
What would have made it worse would have been if we didn't have Phil and he was playing potentially a different... Because he's the only one that when he ramps, he can successfully hit something over and over and over again in the same turn.
Mm.
So I would have gone up potentially and done 2 damage plus 2 damage in the one turn and would have brought it down to 8, right? And that would also require, if we were to burn this in time, multiple people also getting there to do their thing. He did it solo in one round.
Yeah, actually, when you one-shot the quest objective, it does mean that it's going to be pretty easy, right?
Mm.
So, yeah, it's a good point. And if he can't do that, or if it takes all three of us wailing on it for two rounds instead of him just one round, yeah, you're right. That does change the scenario. It probably gets a bit more hairy.
Mm. Okay, let's do a little bit of battle goals. So I actually recorded these ones instead of playing the guessing game. I had Plebeian. I was never allowed to kill an elite named or boss creature. And I successfully did that. I was very nervous towards the end when I was doing my big ability that was going to hit two things, but I calculated that unless I pulled a +2 or a crit, I wasn't going to kill the one that I was hitting. And I should be okay, but I was still relying on RNG. I didn't want to look like I wasn't helping because ultimately I still wanted a bit of XP and to show up in the damage meters, which, spoiler alert, I didn't. But that was my battle goal, guys.
That's pretty normal, though. And
shut up.
Interesting, though, that battle goal in this mission, I'm pretty sure just from memory, it was, 6, 7, 8, 9 elites and 2 normals? I feel like that's the mix in this one. Because I think there was only 2 or 3 normal of those frost demons, ice demons, whatever they're called. And then all of the Yetis were elite. So that one that you picked in a normal scenario is kind of like, yeah, that's okay. I can avoid killing an elite. But I feel like after the halfway point of this mission, it was like literally all elites.
I was like a little bit worried about that. But this is also one of the reasons, other than... coming into the scenario very dead, that I went a different build and went a bit more ranged where I really wasn't going to hit too hard and I could focus on staying alive, taking a couple of hits and keeping you guys up. And I wouldn't be at risk of accidentally killing something. So Gaz, what did you have?
I can't remember the name of it, but it your Dawdler. Yeah, Dawdler. That's right. Yeah. Really interesting one. Mm. Two ticks. So that was why I went for it. It meant that I could never use the lower initiative card from the two cards that I played when I picked. So it was really interesting in some situations when I needed to go really early because I wanted to do something. So especially with my big payoff card that I was trying to get everyone to retaliate me, I want to go really early so they target me, but also so that I get the card off before they attack. I think it goes at around about a 17 or a 20 or something like that. But that means I have to choose another card to go before it and choose that be the higher one, which meant that I think I had to burn a really quick card that I wasn't actually going to use. So that was interesting. It didn't really have that much of an impact on me. It was more just remembering to do it. That's what I had to do. So I always had to look at it and go, okay. There was a couple of times I went super late because I was just left with a late card and a normal card. But I feel like a majority of the Geminate cards are all in the lower tier, like the lower 50 or lower. So most of them, it didn't really have that impact, or maybe 60 or lower. So yeah, it was definitely a fun one to play around because it was always looking and going like, I need to go early, but I need to then play this extra card, or okay, I'm just going to resign myself to probably not going before they do. So I need to plan around that.
It's definitely interesting enough that it would mix things up. In fact, that particular one, it would be interesting with all of us at different times to see how we all will kind of manage it.
Well, it wouldn't affect Kelvin because he goes like 96 anyway, right? Like his
yeah, well,
like,
he goes from 78 to 96. I mean, that's funny. So true. There you go. Speaking of Kelvin, he had Duelist, so he was never allowed to exit a hex that was adjacent to an enemy, which wasn't something that ever bothered him because his minions were doing all of the running ahead and fighting stuff. It just meant that if something got into his face, he wouldn't be able to leave that particular hex. So it worked out really well for him, and he definitely achieved that.
Is that a two-tick one?
No, I think that was a one.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Like, no, everyone else gets the easy two-tick ones, or the ones that they can do, like hang back and walk two spots and all that. And all the ones that I have, I know are going to book us. I just got
because you always pick the ones that say don't kill or do anything in this scenario. And it'll be like loot less than one other or use an item. And you're like, nah, they sound too weird. I'm going to go with the one that says do nothing for most of the game. And then complain about it when I can't achieve it.
No, I definitely struggle with these. And then Phil had to kill, he had pacifist. So he had to kill three enemies or less. And this is when he was asking us, does the objective count as an enemy? And I said to him, no, it does not. So that was fine. Now it was ticks all around.
I think he landed on three inclusive of that anyway. So even if they had counted, I think he still got that. But yeah, it was the conversation. This is the funny conversation that you get around battle goals is that you get halfway through and someone will ask some random question like, does the altar count as an enemy? And you're like, well, yeah, because you can do damage. Yeah, but does it count as an enemy? Like, I'm not really sure why you are, like, articulating your question in this manner.
Yeah.
So it's, you get some of those, and then you're like, it's almost like, oh, okay, yeah, I've got you. It's battle goal things, right?
Yeah, sneaky battle goal and journals and all that kind of stuff,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And then, yeah, we have DPS charts. Now, look, I don't really think we need to go through them this week. I don't think it's that important.
Just claim admin error. That's what you do every other week. You're like, oh, I think I forgot to write all my damage down and my tanking down and like the things off that I did. So shoot through it because I think there's some kudos here for some people. Like Phil, I'm pretty sure, did big damage.
Phil broke records. So Phil finished up on his Deathwalker with 51 overall damage, all right, which he was the first person to crack the 50s, in a relatively small scenario too. So that was huge. Very big.
It helps when you do 18 in one round to one thing, right?
Pretty much. Calvin finished up on 32, so came second. His creatures did a fair bit, actually. His summons did a fair bit, that's the cool thing about the Bone Chopper is they can keep resummoning them. And throw them against a lot of these retaliatory shieldy guys. And his damage just continues to build. Like, you know, he'll go in with something that has an attack of one or two. And Calvin's been very fortunate and good with his deck. Also, because of that new perk he got to start off with the Wraith out. And
it booked itself in the first turn.
yeah, of course. Like,
yeah, but no, I know what you mean.
It definitely did.
Yeah.
But it's damage.
It is a cool change. And I don't know if all summons are like this in Frosthaven compared to Gloomhaven, but it is cool that he can resummon things because it's given him a bit more maneuverability for when we need to move from one room to another, and he can unsummon them, which discards his cards, but then kind of move really quickly, do like a short rest, get them back, and then play them back again. So instead of having to wait for them to move one or two squares, which the summoner used to run into that problem all the time in Gloomhaven, you go, oh, well, all right, we've got to get into this room, so I guess give me like three turns to get my army there. The other thing, though, that came up, as you said, with the retaliate, is that he could just, it didn't matter as much. When your creatures are burn cards and you summon them and then they die in one hit because they just completely kill themselves on a retaliate monster, it feels pretty bad, yeah. And the fact that he was able to then, you know, again, obviously there's still an attrition piece to it because he's losing cards, but he doesn't have to burn it, so he can resummon it. I think it's a really positive improvement from a fun perspective. right? Yeah. Like, not just a power level thing, because I'm sure that's all balanced, but it's just as a, cool, you're a summoner, but you get to keep doing things.
I think it's actually unique to him as well, because I know Phil has a summoner, pretty sure it's when it's dead, it's in the lost pile, traditionally. So I think it's not an overall summon thing, but when you've got a full necromancer-style class, I think that it's built into it intentionally to make sure it works. So then, yeah, that was Calvin with 32. We had, oh no, Gaz was second. Oh, after all that, Gaz actually had 39. So yes, Gaz, and a lot of that, there's a big section down here that I'm reading that says 4-4-4-4, and that would have been in one round.
We're like, why are you hitting yourself? Yeah.
So Gaz pulled off 39. So yeah, it was 51-39, 32. Mine wasn't that important. Damage taken, Gaz definitely mitigated.
Hang on a second. Is this the scenario that you did less damage than, like, in your whole scenario than Phil did in, like, one round, yeah?
Yes.
Didn't you do, like, one damage?
I did less damage than your retaliate round.
Look,
I was definitely, I don't know what I was doing, but it was not damage. But I was equally doing everything. I don't know what to do. I was getting entangled a lot. That was the round I was meant to do something big. I don't know. I pulled off 13. Okay, yep, 13. I'm not ashamed of it. We all sometimes aren't up to scratch and, we don't perform.
In all seriousness, so 13 damage, that would mean that, like, because you obviously have topped the healing and, say, the tanking, right? Like, that's why you did such low damage, because you were doing the other ones really well. Is that right?
Yeah. Hang on. Let me get there. So, tanking, okay, that was you. You topped it.
Yeah. Okay.
And that was probably from that round with the shields and all that. You probably negated the bunch and all that. Now, I say this is kind of where things get a little bit dodgy, is that I pulled three natural nulls that were on me. So, I mean, yeah.
I feel like maybe half an hour ago you were trying to convince me that pulling three nulls was a good tanking ability, and now you're trying to
skill. The writing down the stats is flawed, and I need to fix that, because technically, like, there should be a separate column for how there's tanking and then there's amazing tanking.
Admin error again. Are you saying another admin error? Like, there's a problem with the record keeping that is meaning that you're. A tanking ability isn't getting recorded well enough.
Yeah. Well, it's something in the code. Mm-hmm. And then Calvin's skeletons did a bit of tanking and then healing. Let's see, did I do that? 21. 16. I beat Calvin by one. So
hey, there you go. He did something, right?
I beat Calvin by one. And he unloaded his fattest heal at the very start. Okay, mm-hmm. So that was kind of like a little top up, at the very beginning, and then I. Took care of main heal for the rest. All right.
Okay. Yeah. Actually, that first opener was a big, big play. Like, we kind of talked about that, and we didn't talk about specific moves afterwards. But we were all starting on very low life and brittle, so most of us would probably be burning a card if we got hit by anything. You were slightly the exception because you didn't have brittle, but you were on, like, against super low. Calvin has a burn card that's like an AOE heal, so area of effect, hits everyone around us, and it does heaps. So I think between that, I hit my heal card, I pretty much, I think we got all of us back up to full before they even had a turn. So it was a really good kind of, like, it took a turn of us to do it, but it was good because it kind of reset all that negative effects we started with.
Yes. And that concludes damage and battle goals and everything for scenario 5. One thing I wanted to add from earlier, I'm not going to explain how or how it happened, but we unlocked the Trapper class.
We did.
At some point on Monday. And we've got two brand new classes that's just waiting to be explored. Again, just like the Snowflake one, this Trap one, we did not open or look into at all. We just assume it's a healer.
yeah, that's healing traps, right?
Yep. That's right. No game has that, so it would make sense, right? That Isaac would go, hey, let's just throw a healing trapper out there and just puts heal bombs on the floor. But then he's got to, like, I'm going a bit left field here, but he's got to make sure the monsters don't go into it because then they heal.
I'm pretty sure this is why Isaac is designing this game and not you. But
Steady yeah. Homebrew, good idea. Deadhaven coming out Kickstarter 2026.
Yeah, along with the cake eating game, right?
That's right.
Yeah. That is going to be cool. I'm wondering how many classes we're going to have ready to unlock when we start getting some retirements. So it's tricky because, if I really pushed for it and everyone chose the scenarios I wanted, I could retire really quickly. Like, I know, I can see where my retirement is and I know which missions I need to do this. But I don't want to. Like, I want to see a bunch of the class. I don't want to just open up the new one to see the starting cards it gets. Because I want to see, you know, at least the first 5 or 6 levels of the Geminate. But then if I get through the first 5 or 6 levels, I'm going to want to see 7, 8, 9 because that's, you know, where your payoff is. So it's really tricky. Like I really, really, really want to open up those boxes. But I am kind of resigned to the fact that I won't, and that I'm sure we're going to get a whole bunch more characters before it's time to retire.
Yeah. One day. What did we learn? What did you learn? What did I learn? And don't be snarky with it.
Okay. I think I'm finding the rhythm of my class, so learning how I need to balance my cards to... I know I keep saying this and it's become a bit of a joke about not getting XP and there only being burn cards, but I finished that scenario on one card and not because I got pummeled or played poorly or anything like that. Like, I was choosing to use probably a burn card every other turn thereabouts to get XP... to move around, because I think some of the bigger and more impactful ones are. So, yeah, getting that rhythm. I did get myself caught a couple of times towards the end in the wrong form. So, actually, when we were talking about leveling up, something I didn't mention, and I've talked about roughly how the class that I'm playing works, where you have a melee form and you have a ranged form. You have 14 cards, which is... you can make your deck of whatever 14 cards you want from the starting group. But because you can only play cards in your current form, you kind of need to balance it. So I've currently got 7 and 7. 7 melee cards, 7 range cards. When you level up, you get to choose between 2 cards, like every other class does when they level up. One of them is ranged and one of them is melee. So already I'm tipping a bit, right? Like I'm going to have more options. And what I actually did when I redesigned... like got the card because I chose a melee one, I actually dipped out a range card so I am more heavy in melee. And I found myself in a couple of weird situations where I was like, I need to long rest. Or I think I even did a short rest when I only had like 3 cards in my discard pile because I needed to get a certain card back in order to be able to shift into my ranged form, which I had like 4 cards for, which is like 2 turns. So yeah, while I'm finding my rhythm, I'm also have started creating more obstacles and hurdles for myself by kind of finding that. So yeah, it's going to be interesting, but yeah, definitely finding out more about the class. What about you?
Well, just on your note, with your class, like you were saying, you're getting to the point where you're learning to lose some of the cards intentionally at the right moments to get XP, because that was something that you were really struggling with. And now, like you said, you finished this particular one on 1 card left without exhausting. I give it another couple of scenarios and you'll go that one step further and you'll time it so that you exhaust a round or 2, knowing that we're going to complete it, but maximizing that output, right? As you learn more of that.
Yeah, well, one of my masteries is burn a card every turn, so I might just do that and for the first, like, 7 turns and then just say, good luck. Good luck, guys. Like, I believe in you. You've got this. I'm going home. Let me know.
Yeah. I was listening to some other people talking about Frosthaven, and one of the comments that were being made about the Drifter was he was on autopilot in a way where, you know, you just equip your +2 damage persistent and just walk around, hit things, and that is crucial to playing the Drifter. Like that card has to be used almost. And it was a very kind of, if you had a bunch of friends over and you had one player who hadn't played before, you give them the Drifter, because it's just, there's only one right way to really play it, right? And I thought about that, and then I was like, well, I can see a world where that's the case, but there's, like, if we were to, like, in this particular scenario, I tried something different, right? I didn't use that card. I tried a ranged one, because there's actually quite a few ranged ones with Muddle and Poison, and there's a move fast one, which works in different scenarios, but I didn't use that one, didn't use my tank one, didn't use Retaliate one, did the heal and ranged, right? And played a different style. I like the fact that it feels flexible, right? Now, the comparison I'm going to make to this is that we're playing on the difficulty for our level. If for any reason, right, you wanted to join the Frosthaven International and compete, right, where they're just like, here's your characters, here's the dungeon, mythic dungeons, just like World of Warcraft, you know, the difficulty is super high, that initial build is probably not going to work. And you need to be more flexible with your options. Because that, yeah, that one with the plus 2 to damage, although you have to use every single time, it's not. Now, look, I'm a bit stretching it a little bit here. But my point is, I was learning that the class is very fun to play and quite flexible. And it comes a little bit more down to, you know, how do you want to play it? Because you can mix it up and it doesn't feel boring.
Yeah, well, that's a really good point, and something that I've enjoyed through most of Gloomhaven, and I'm seeing elements in that your class, especially in Frosthaven, is that there are options to be made, and I think that's a really important component of having a class that levels up and that you're playing for so long, is you want to feel like you're having choice. If you're looking at your cards and going like, you know what, half of these are garbage and half of them are amazing, so I'll just pick the amazing ones and go, I feel like, yeah, that would be boring, right? And so I think about the last, say, three scenarios that we've done and, you know, your different buff cards that you've picked to put on. And yeah, it has been very different. Like, I know you've been, one of them you were moving and hitting, another one you were tanking and doing something else, and that one you were healing and doing range. So it feels like from an outside perspective, you're getting a feel for what each of the kind of builds does. Mm. And you probably have the best flexibility to change that based on the scenario. Mm. Like, you can only get so much from the opening room and what our goal is, but if you can pull something from that, you've got that ability to be like, you know what, this is going to be one that I'm going to need to tank, right? So I need to go tank in this one. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, no, it's very enjoyable. So that about wraps it up. Thank you all for joining us on another episode of A Master's Degree in Rolling Terribly.
And remember, unless you're Daddy, when it comes to rolling terribly, it's all in the wrist.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Don't go changing the format.